word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Even if you aren't a collector, you've likely heard of the annual spectacle of the comic book industry known as Comic-Con.
I was looking out my hotel room window and I saw three Ninja Turtles really impatiently checking their watches.
In the mind of every comic book fiend, Comic-Con is just the answer to all your prayers. It's like heaven, in as much as, like they always tell you, when you go to heaven, everything you've ever lost is going to come back to you.
That was Seth Rogen and Kevin Smith in a trailer for Comic-Con, Morgan Spurlock's new documentary of the mildly surreal West Coast convention. A parallel convention for gamers is growing in popularity, and no shortage of passion. Last weekend, PAX East sold out its third annual conference in Boston with an estimated 100,000 game distributors, developers, and devotees. Clay Wirestone is a writer whose work has appeared in Mental Floss magazine and on the History Channel. He's also arts editor for the Concord Monitor and was at PAX East 2012 and joins us in the studio to tell us about it. Clay, great to have you back.
Great to be here.
Give us a quick primer on the history of PAX East.
Well, the convention actually started on the West Coast back in 2004 by a couple of guys who draw a webcomic called Penny Arcade. It was just a few thousand people the first year, and then it grew to tens of thousands. They brought it to Boston, an East Coast version, in 2010. And last year they had more than 70,000 people there. It's grown so big that the city of Boston has actually signed them up to hold the convention there through 2023.
Well, so is there a lot of crossover between that kind of geek culture associated with comic books and video games? I mean, give us a sense of this atmosphere.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think what's interesting about it is there's so much money now that's being made both in comic books, the comic book field through the movies, and in just video games in general, that, I mean, these are not exactly niches anymore. And yet at the same time, people who are really fans of comic books and people who are really fans of video games feel a little bit like people look down on them. They feel a little bit like they're still in a minority in the mainstream. And so something like PAX East or any other kind of con is just a giant safe space for geekery.
So they can dress up in their Ninja Turtle costumes, et cetera.
Well, yes. I mean, there is a kind of a misapprehension, I think, sometimes about conventions that everybody goes dressed as a Pokemon, let's say. But I would say it's probably less than 1%. I mean, that being said, they're very noticeable.
They're the ones the cameras train on, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, there were some really great costumes. I mean, some very random folks too, like Colonel Sanders. The comic book guy from The Simpsons. There was somebody dressed as the Phantom of the Opera for some reason. I was actually really interested to see how many people are dressed as Doctor Who, which, I mean, is obviously a series that's been going on for decades now over in Britain, but it really seems to have caught on for the American gamer geeks.
Well, of course, it's a place for news. It's a place for the industry, but no new consoles were announced at PAX East. What does that signal? That it's more of a fan conference than a place where business gets done?
It's definitely focused on fans. I mean, there's a big business conference for video games that's held every year. It's called E3, the Electronics Entertainment Expo, and that's going to be held in June in Los Angeles. And if there's really big announcements, you'll probably see some of them there.
So let's look at some of the big games being talked about. One of them, the third in the BioShock series, BioShock Infinite is what it's called. Let's hear a little bit from that.
I didn't do any of this!
Hey, it's just a postman. He didn't hurt anybody.
It's DeWitt!
All right, I'm having a bit of a deja vu. Haven't we heard about this game before?
Oh, absolutely. BioShock Infinite was actually announced back in August of 2010. It has a big presence at PAX East because the developer Irrational Studios is based in Quincy, Massachusetts. But it's just really an indication of how long these kind of top-of-the-line, graphic-intensive games take to develop.
So a lot of buzz around the game's secret world is here just a bit from an extremely cinematic trailer.
What if I told you there was a secret world? A world where dark creatures stalk the city streets. Where secret societies pull the strings of presidents, the media, and powerful CEOs. Now, what if I told you that world is ours?
Yeah, And if you think that BioShock Infinite has been in the works for a long time, the secret world actually had its development start back in 2002.
Wow, that is a long time. much longer than Hollywood films, certainly. And we have previously talked about how huge the video gaming industry is, in fact, overtaking Hollywood in production and marketing. And yet, you discovered at PAX East a lot of interest in indie games.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's almost a parallel convention going on that has for these smaller scale developers. You know, even as short a time as 2 years ago, I think if you went to PAX East, a lot of the interest from the indie developers would be, well, I want to get my game on the PlayStation, or I want to get my game on the Xbox or Wii. You know, I want to attract the interest of the big publishers. But you know, what's really changed now is that basically every indie game every indie developer that that I saw at the expo, they were really aiming for the iPad. They were aiming for the iPhone.
Uh-huh. So something that everyone can carry around, probably not quite as complicated and easier to develop.
Oh, absolutely, and potentially much more profitable, because you're not trying to split your money with a publisher or a console maker. I mean, much of it goes directly to you.
So PAX East apparently made efforts to highlight the small guy. They set up a Boston Indie Showcase. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. They selected six games that were kind of meant for mobile devices. One of the ones that I especially enjoyed is a game called Spell Tower. All you really need to know are three words, Scrabble meets Tetris. So if that sounds appealing to you, that's great. There's also a game called a Lawnmower Challenge, which is kind of a puzzle game that involves mowing a lawn, but it's much more addictive than actually lawn mowing.
I looked through a little slideshow, and there's Retro Effect. That's a Meredith, New Hampshire game maker is developing a game as well. So a lot of people getting in on this, and a lot of them getting funding on Kickstarter, which has become a sort of go-to place for indie artists, filmmakers, reporters, writers, and now video game developers. Is Kickstarter becoming like a player in the industry?
Oh, it's huge for video games right now. It actually had its own room at the conference that had its own separate exhibitors, people that had gotten their funding through Kickstarter. The big breakthrough, actually, for video games came a couple of months ago when the former LucasArts adventure game developer Tim Schafer, he made a game called The Secret of Monkey Island back in 1990, he made a pitch on Kickstarter to make an old-school style point-and-click adventure game on Kickstarter. They were looking for $300,000 to make this game, very bare bones. They ended up raising over $3.3 million on Kickstarter. It was an astonishing success. And at a panel I went to about the Kickstarter funding phenomenon, they said that actually 71% of the people who donated to that game had never been on Kickstarter before, had never donated on Kickstarter before, but 21% of those people then stayed to donate to other things on the site.
Interesting new funding model. I did have a look at the list of panels and programs, and I was completely overwhelmed. I couldn't even imagine being there. Do you have a clear kind of PAX East takeaway from all this?
You know, I think it's really hard, because not only do you have that major exhibition hall with all the big players, you have all the panels, you have all the indie folks, you have a concert series, you have video game tournaments. You have a whole section devoted to board game and tabletop games like Dungeons and Dragons and things. So a lot of the experience is up to you. But that being said, I was really struck by kind of how in flux the industry seemed. You had this huge money on the main floor, but then you had the crowdfunding through Kickstarter. You had people turning towards the iDevices. And so even though these people don't have the money, there's a sense, I think, that the balance of power in the industry is really shifting to these kind of smaller, possibly more creative games.
Well, interesting wrap. Thank you so much, Clay, for coming in.
Oh, absolutely.
Clay Wirestone's work has appeared in Mental Floss magazine and on the History Channel, and he's arts editor for the Concord Monitor, and also kind enough to fill us in on the video game universe from time to time. You can find more about PAX East and some of the games we talked about at wordofmouthradio.org. Now stay with us. A fisherman supplements his income by bottling icebergs. That's when Word of Mouth continues after a short break.